For the fans, by the fans, this is the Non-League Football Show, and I'm Tim Fuel, back once more with an hour of the best in non-league, which is the perfect place to introduce my first guest of the evening. No stranger to the show and no stranger to many clubs, or clubhouses for that matter. Good evening, Mr. Dave Anderton.
Good evening. Nice to be introduced as a guest.
Well, yeah, you are a guest now, because various sort of commitments, last-minute technical hitches, and just general life has got in the way, hasn't it?
So, yeah. We've been done by the Gremlins tonight.
It might have been an early 80s film, but it still plagues us all. But I won't waste your knowledge and your talents, because it is great to have you back on. And what a week.
Yes, it's true.
Yeah, what a week to reappear. It's FA Vars weekend.
Yes, you know, and it's a competition that I haven't had much experience of. Obviously, outside of our show and sort of going to Wembley and doing the radio for the finals, which has been brilliant. That's my knowledge of it. But to be involved in it is really good. It's exciting. Saturday we play Flackwell Heath at home. But what I don't think I ever, though we spoke about it in the past, what I didn't realise is just how many teams are in it. It's a massive competition.
Yeah, first round proper this weekend. 105 ties, so that makes you one of 210 clubs in this round.
Yeah, but listen, we've won two games to get here. You know, we've won two games in the VAR. I'm sure we have one or two anyway.
Is that your best record in the VARs, Dave?
Yeah, I think it's my only record in the VARs. We've won two games to sort of get the round one. So, God knows only how many games it will be if we were to get sort of towards the final. But it's exciting. It's a competition that the club want to do well in. And as much as we all want to, who doesn't want to go to Wembley? But it's like any other cup competition. It's got FA on it. You just got to be careful. You know, there'll be upsets and, you know, there'll be teams sitting with their heads between their knees at 5 o'clock Saturday, and we just have to try and make sure we're not one of them.
Yeah, you mentioned, you know, going to the finals, speaking to various people on this show over the years, and obviously over the years we've spoken and met with winners of the FA Vars, someone like the former Wealdstone manager Gordon Bartlett, who won it with Yedin in 1990, with the runner-up in 86 with Southall. He springs to mind. So for us, we've seen the whites of the eyes of the winners, and we've heard the stories and what it means to them. But what about the modern player? Do they recognise the significance and the opportunity that the FA Vars can give them?
Well, I can only speak for my own bunch, and they certainly do. Their experience for the level, a lot of them. Their main sort of playing career has been in the trophy and the FA Cup. But they all know where the Vars finishes, and they're keen to do well in it. But it's a massive, massive competition. It's probably, team-wise, it's the biggest of the three. It's got to be. You know, we're one team in it, and we've got to be careful of looking too far ahead, because, you know, these competitions, 90 minutes, you've got to be right on your mettle, you know, to see it through and get into the next round. But so Flackwell Heath come to our place Saturday. We've done our homework. We've worked hard. We're aware of the occasion, everything about it. But we just have to try and go out now and produce, and we won't be taking anything lightly, believe me.
It's not a local derby, but they're a fairly local club, and you'll know some of their players. Does that help when you're going into a big game like this?
Well, I think, to be fair, my assistant manager, Steve Holtons, has managed five of their teams, so we're aware of the characters, you know, part of their team, and I think information helps, but, you know, likewise, they'll have the exact same information on us. So I think different people feel differently about it. I'm certainly a manager that the more I know about the opposition, the happier I feel that I can sort of prepare my side properly. But you know, on the day, you know, you do all the homework you like. You know, we've all been there, Tim. On the day, it's who turns up and who's in the mood and gets their game together. So I think it'd be wrong not to prepare, but at the same time, all the preparation once it hits 3 o'clock, you know, there's still a game of football to be played.
This one's on the day, but you're doing well in step five this season, building a squad.
Yeah, very well. Yeah.
And are you top of the league of the combined counties and unbeaten? Is that right?
Yeah, it is. I'm assuming if you don't know it off by heart. Yes. Yeah, we are. We played. Here I go now. You know me and stuff. I guess. We've played. I think we've played 9 games, 1-8, drawn 1 in the league. And we've won 2 games in the Vars. The only game we've lost is the only one that would have got the club some money, which is the FA Cup. So that's just the way the cookie crumbles. And we were well beaten on the day. I remember talking to you about it. But yes, so the league, we've got a good start and made people aware that we're so far, and I say so far, and I mean that, we've had a good start. But that only gains people's knowledge of it, and you know, you get a bit more respect, and also people turning up to play, you fancy it because it's a big game because you're playing the team at the top of the league. And we've all been there. I don't say that arrogantly. I say that through, I've been in it a long time and I've spent a bit of that at the top of the league with various teams in various leagues. But when you're not top of the league and you go to the team that are top of the league, it's always a day you look forward to. So my players have to get used to dealing with that every week while they're up there, you know. And so far, they've done that.
And is the FA Vars a welcome distraction then this weekend, or would you prefer to be carrying on that league run?
Listen, managers are judged on leagues, but who beats the glory of a cup final, especially one at Wembley? So I don't know. I know that the club want to do well in it, but are, you know, intelligent enough to understand that 10 bad minutes in a cup game and you're out of it. So, it's a great distraction. It's not even a distraction. It's just part of what we're trying to do well in, you know. The league and the Vars, I would say for most teams at our level, that'll be sort of 1 and 2 on their list, and then comes in the county cups and the league cups and other competitions like that. So we openly admit, like I'm sure everyone else has, you know, I know you're speaking to the manager Trafford, you know, whatever that cup competition is, whether it be the trophy or the FA Cup, you all want to do well in it.
And obviously you've been getting the results in the league this season. You're probably visiting a lot of step five clubs maybe you hadn't been to before, certainly not for a while. You were there at the outset at AFC Wimbledon at that level, and obviously there's been various rejigs over the years since then. But have you noticed anything different, say, from when you're competing at that step with AFC Wimbledon?
Well, I took over AFC Wimbledon after they'd won promotion out of step five. So I took over at the level above. But my last sort of knowledge of this level was right at the start of my career at North Greenford, which is 128 years ago, I think. What I've noticed about it is players are fitter, players are more organised, the conditions are better in most places. I have been really pleasantly surprised by the quality, and teams do try and play and well, I think teams try and overplay. You know, I'm a bit more old school, as you know about it. But it is a level that you would certainly, if you were going out to watch a game and you had £7 in your pocket, you know, you'd pay in and get yourself a pint and watch it. It is, and everyone so far we've played against has come and tried to beat us. So I think as you go up levels, it becomes technical, and teams get a little bit more defensive when they play the big sides, which can be a bit drab at times. Not at this level. We've yet to play someone that hasn't tried to beat us, and I think that's healthy. The only downside of them being bluntly honest is that I think the officials aren't great. You know, but then I've said that to you for 20 years.
At every level.
So I might be feeling a bit harsh, but I've found it to be, I've nearly enjoyed it. And ask any manager that's in the game, we very rarely enjoy this job until afterwards, but it's been a pleasure at times.
And obviously, non-league day this weekend, and we'll speak to other guests later on in the show about that, but But as a manager, a seasoned non-league man, what have you seen? What's the biggest hurdle facing non-league clubs in the modern world of football, apart from officials?
Oh, good. It's a good question. I would say I think that the people at the top need to keep feeding the people at the bottom, and I know we've no divine right to ask them for it. But I think that, you know, money needs to be fed down to the bottom levels. I think that's massive. I think what's also massive is people's behaviour as members of staff and managers in the dugouts at the level. I've been disappointed with some of that. And I'm no guardian angel in the dugout at times, but it's been a bit park footballish for me, and I'm probably doing park football an injustice by saying that, but you know what I mean. It's a bit, you know, managers need to manage and not sort of slag off referees and other players in the opposition and sort of conduct themselves a little bit better. I would say that needs to be addressed. And like anything that we do, we, you know, I've done the coaching badges and I've got in and done that side of it. I think that that needs to be pushed as much as it can be into managers and coaches of all levels, and especially the level I'm working at now. I think, and as part of your coaching or management course, there should be something set aside for basically how to behave in a public dugout in a dugout where the paying public have paid to get in. Don't get me wrong, you know, I'm not, as I said before, I know I've got my faults at times and I've been loud, and you know, I'm not denying that. I just think if you're talking about moving the game on, you know, I think it is moving on the pitch in as much as players' fitness, how they look after themselves, the style of the football, and even the condition of most pitches, it has got better. But we need to try and educate and help people who are managing and coaching sides.
It's a fair point, because obviously if we're talking about non-league day and we're getting people there that maybe haven't been to a non-league game for years or recently, and you're saying, you know, the quality of the football, the grounds, you know, we've got all this licensing coming in where clubs have to fill in this bit of paper, that bit of paper, tick all these boxes and that sort of thing. But it's a bit like taking your kids around a friend's house and they misbehave, isn't it? That's the one bit that everybody will remember, and it's a bit that logs in their mind.
It is, yeah. And I think it's a blind spot. Because I hadn't really thought about it myself. But listen, the other thing is it may be an age thing. I'm getting too old. that these sort of things sort of flag up in the radar. But it's a little bit of a blind spot where we coach everything and we try and do badges, which is absolutely, you know, it's of the utmost importance that people who are coaching the game are qualified to do that. But I just think there's a little side issue of, I know when you do your A license, maybe it's your pro license, you do a media course where you sort of manage how to deal with media and sort of course. I think there could be something slotted in at all levels of non-league football where you take your badges. There should be, and we're not even saying a course, just a video of here's how you behave and here's how you don't behave. And the same old story for officials. I know I moan about them, but I would at all levels of football bring in a severe punishment for players who crowd officials and who bully them and impose themselves on, and indeed managers like myself who can scream and shout at them and go and see them at half time and sort of lean on them a bit. I think that should all be stopped. I think that it should be stopped on the pitch where the captain's the only one that can go and speak to them. And managers should be able to say hello at half two or 2 o'clock if you like, and can't then go and see him until 5 o'clock. I think that would help the situation as well. But that's only my opinion of what I've seen, you know.
Yeah, maybe it is that we need more support at the lower levels. As you know, the further you go up, probably that there's less for you to do as a manager other than focus on the players that you need to deal with, because there's more people around, more bodies that are running the club, doing this, looking after social media and things like that. At your level, you're having to be everything to everybody because there just aren't enough people involved in the club to see oversee everything.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm really fortunate. You know, I've got lots of good people around me who do that. But I'm in other clubs there isn't. And getting, you know, I know even at Chertsey, trying to get speaking to the guys there, trying to get other volunteers, younger volunteers, to be committee members and what have you, and help fundraise. And it's a very, very difficult job. And, you know, again, we've said for many years how some teams survive is, it's a miracle from week to week, really. That's a real, you know, it's a real achievement. And I know you can't just sort of chuck money at people for nothing, but I do think that the big guys, listen, if agents are taking millions of pounds out of the game for doing not an awful lot, then there's got to be a case for millions of pounds being drifted towards the bottom of it to help us produce younger players and a better facility and better officials. Because at the top level, there's, you know, that's going to dry up as well, official wise. I think there's a real starvation of that side of it. And maybe that's something that needs to be looked at. But, I only say what I see, as Roy Walker used to say. I genuinely mean it, you know, and I genuinely care about it.
What's a discussion I was having with someone the other day about volunteers, and you look at the people that are coming through football clubs, and it tends to be sons or daughters of people that are already involved with the football club, or perhaps ex-players. There's no necessarily new blood coming through, and maybe that's something where the FA and other people involved in the game need to look a wider thing. It's all in good getting kids to play football when they're at school, but maybe, you know, not everybody's, you know, so some people have two left feet, and not everybody's going to make it as a footballer. So maybe there's something to be said about the other elements of the game of football and the community and your local non-league club that we should be instilling in kids when they're at school, so that they come through as volunteers and help the clubs and keep things alive.
Yeah, absolutely. And how many? Listen, I've managed thousands of players over the 30 years I've been doing it, and I look at lots of players of mine who are now retired and don't even go to a game of football. You know, they've been, you know, there's got to be a way of enticing people with that sort of knowledge in and around it. The other one for me is the same way officials, young footballers who give up the game, or who, I don't know. I just think we need to get younger blood into it at the bottom level. And, I think you're right in what you're saying. It tends to be sons, daughters, grandsons that sort of come with their parents or grandparents and get involved in the club. And there's got to be a better way of making a wider net to encourage people into it, you know.
We need some young blood. I've got to retire at some point. I can't keep going like this.
Well, listen, the way we've had to link this in tonight, you know, we ain't got too many of these left. I have a piece of coat hanger hanging out the window of a car. I'm going to try and get a signal, you know. But
the things we'll do for non-league, Dave.
Yeah, absolutely. But the other thing I would say, and I suppose you have to be careful, is, you know, we're talking about things we're concerned about. What I should also say is it's got a real freedom about it, the lower leagues, you know, the way people play football, the, you know, maybe because I'm cynical because I've sort of come from the level of where I've had most of my management, that it's very serious for me and it's job-like. Whereas I get to see people who a couple of people, I won't mention teams, where I've seen their players come in at 20 past two, you know, while we're in the middle of a warm-up, and, you know, they're just, all right, yeah, no, sorry, I'm late. You know, there's no big deal. You're free to go and play. And so there's that side of it. So we have to be very careful of being negative. There's lots and lots of positives. And as a paying sport, it's in good shape.
Well, good stuff. Thanks as ever, Dave. Good luck at the weekend, and hopefully we'll have you back in the studio in full flow next week.
That would be nice. Let's see if we can make that happen. You know, thanks a lot.
Okay, so as well as the FA Vase this weekend, it's also the FA Trophy. 56 ties in the preliminary round as clubs dream of that run to Wembley. One of the most interesting ties ahead is that at Trafford FC, who take on Ramsbottom United. I'm pleased to say that Tom Baker, manager at Trafford FC, joins us on the line. Good evening, Tom.
Good evening, Tim.
So, FA Trophy this week, what does that mean to you? What does the trophy mean to your club?
Probably like most, at our level, Tim, it's a really important competition. I think, obviously, when you're looking at the season, in the off-season and pre-season, obviously, the league's always priority, but the two FA competitions in the FA Cup and the FA Trophy are vital. The trophy is potentially a competition that, you know, you can progress in, and if you go through rounds, there's some big ties that you could you could land, and obviously financially for clubs at our level and specifically ourselves, it's really, really important.
And from the outset, from the start of the season, is it always something you aim to go as far as possible in?
Yeah, like I say, I think the trophy in the FA Cup, both of them competitions, we'll field a stronger team as we can, and we'll want to progress as far as we can. I'm sure everyone's got the same goals, because again, the money that it can bring in for the club is so important.
And obviously, it's a fairly local game for you. Your home tie obviously helps. Does that help spice up a cup tie when it's more a local side?
Definitely, yeah. Obviously, both teams know each other well. We've played each other many a time. We actually only played Ramsbottom probably about a fortnight ago in the league. So, they're familiar with us. We're familiar with them. So it's going to be an exciting game, and it's a localish game. It's good that it's a home for us. We've not had much luck with cup draws in terms of home and aways over the last couple of seasons when I've been in charge. But yeah, it's an exciting game for both clubs, I'm sure, and the supporters.
And you mentioned you played each other recently in the league. I think you won that one, didn't you?
We did, yeah. We won 1-0.
And does that give you a psychological advantage, or do you think that gives them more reason to want to beat you in this trophy?
It's a difficult one to say, to be honest. No two games are the same, I think. Whether it's a league game or a cup game, every game is so different. It was a tight game that night. We deserved the win at the end of the 90 minutes, but this will be a totally different game again. This is at home. That was away. Ramsbottom have just appointed a new manager within the last week, so obviously that's going to play a part in terms of players that are available for them. Maybe they've brought some new lads in, and maybe they're going to play in a different way that the previous manager did. So I'm expecting a different game, but equally, I'm sure it's going to be a really tough game.
And obviously, you're both in that same league, Evo Stick First Division West. Yeah, now, you've played 9 games, I think it is, 6 wins, 3 defeats, and you're 6th in the table, but in the playoff zone. It's still early days, but is that where you wanted to be at the start of the season?
Yeah, we wanted to be in the mix. Obviously, we had probably what you've said there don't really resemble sort of the form we're in. We actually lost 3 of the first league games. 3 of the first 4 league games, we actually lost. We won our opening game, and then we lost 3 on the bounce. Since then, we've just won 5 league games on the spin, and I think we've won 9 games in the last 10 in all competitions. So we're in really, really good form at the minute. So we're riding a wave at the minute, and 5th or 6th in the league, I think we are. You know, we're comfortable there. It's really, really tight at the minute, Tim. If you've looked at the table, it's so tight and so competitive, but yeah, it's, you know, we went a couple of rounds in the FA Cup. We're still in the trophy. We're sat near the top of the table, so I can't grumble too much. But I suppose every manager's greedy, and you always want more, and you're always demanding more from your players, and that's what we'll continue to do.
Yeah, and you know, looking at that table, it's still early days, isn't it? But it's a short season with only 20 sides in the division now. So does maybe that Christmas table mean more than it may have had in previous seasons?
Definitely, yeah. I think generally over the past few seasons, we've always said sort of after 10 games, you'll get a clear idea on where people are at and who the sides of that are going to be in contention. And then for me, regardless of the amount of teams that are in the league, I think Christmas is always a real telling period where everyone sort of sat after Christmas, after the Boxing Day or the New Year's game. That's generally quite a good indication of where people are going to be come the end of the season. Although there's still plenty of games to go. Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the league table's saying come the end of the season, come Christmas time.
And looking at your own record there at Trafford, a fairly long term now. It must be a gold watch on its way, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I don't know about that, but it depends if we win this trophy tie on Saturday about that. But no, obviously, yeah, fourth season. Mad to think, really. I mean, I was appointed. I just turned 30 when I was appointed Trafford manager. Just started my fourth season. It's mad to think how time goes so quick. But enjoyed it, and we've progressed each season. And you know, the fact that I'm still at the club, and the fact that the club have still, you know, got me as their manager, we just want to keep progressing and keep pushing forward and keep trying to better what we've done the previous season and driving standards up wherever we can.
And it looks a very close-knit family, you know, sort of orientated type club. You know, there's people that have been there even more years than you. What's the magical ingredient at Trafford?
Yeah, it definitely is. It's tough to say, really, but obviously you've still got the two founders, the guys that started the club up, 27, 28 years ago now. A lot of the directors have been there since day one. It is a really family club. I know everybody says that, but it is. And the club would be, well, it wouldn't be where it is today without the volunteers and the hard work of the directors and the committee members and even the supporters now. It's just a great club, and I feel when I took over, they've just been relegated from the playing side. Things weren't great. The support was dwindling a little bit in terms of attendances. And it's took a lot of hard work from myself and staff, the players and everyone involved with the club. The main sponsor that we've got on board now, who's absolutely fantastic. And the club's it's going in the right direction. It you know, it's only a small club. It's not a massive club, and you know, we understand that. But we're trying to do things as well as we can, be as professional as we can, and see where we can take things. And it's a fantastic club to be involved with. I wouldn't be still there now in my fourth season if it wasn't.
And then away from Trafford, you obviously played a big part in Chorley's success previously when you were a player.
Yeah.
And they've had a great season, start to the season in National North. Do you still keep in touch with people there?
I do. I've still got some friends that that play at Chorley, and I know the chairman really well, Ken, and one of the directors, Graham. Another, again, a fantastic club. Very similar, actually, in terms of the people that are involved at Chorley. As the people that are involved at Trafford, obviously Charlie's a much bigger club and a much bigger supported club, hence the league that they're in. But the people that are involved are very similar, really down to earth, grounded people. And I still speak to them. They've had a staggeringly good start, and it'll be interesting to see where they can take it, because they've been on the verge of promotion now the last couple of seasons. So they're sitting pretty at the minute at the top of the table, and time will tell.
And, you know, can clubs like Chorley, can they compete now with, you know, some of the other bigger clubs around you with massive, massive budgets?
I suppose that's the million-dollar question. But I think you get that at every level. I think the league they're in now, yeah, they can compete. Once you go up to the National League, that's the big question then, because, you know, I wouldn't know percentage-wise, but I would imagine 95% of them teams are full-time professional. I remember back in the day when I played in that league myself, it was pretty much the other way. So, you know, you had the odd professional team and everyone else part-time. It's totally turned on its head now, and you've got some big, big football league clubs that are in that league now, and then you've got some teams, obviously the likes of Salford, that are going to be football league teams very soon. It's a brutal league, that, and generally the teams that go up from the Conference North and the Conference South, the part-time teams, they generally, you know, struggle and possibly come back down. But I'm sure Chorley won't be thinking about that now. They'll just want to try and get promoted, and then and see where they go. But it's a tough, tough league.
And I'm sure you'll look to get promoted with Trafford as well, and also do well in the FA Trophy this weekend. Thank you for joining us, Tom. It's been fantastic talking to you, and we'll catch up with you later in the season.
That's great. Thanks for having me on.
So it is the international break this weekend, and with that, it is non-league day. Hundreds of clubs getting involved with more and more creative ways to attract in fans who may not usually venture along to support their local non-league club. A tougher challenge for some with the FA Trophy and FA Vars action, limiting potential admission reductions, but plenty going on nonetheless. To get a flavour, let's speak to old friend of the show and sometime non-league day media officer, Mark Carruthers. Welcome back to the show, Mark.
Thank you very much. It's not so much of the older.
You're not old. You're just the show's old. I'm feeling old. And you're at a game. What game are you at this evening? Wednesday evening.
I am. I'm in the Wearside League here in South Tyneside. It's Bolden against Hartlepool FC. Currently 1-0 to Hartlepool FC. If you're interested, great goal after 7 minutes from about 35 yards out. So good start.
See. That proves non-league, doesn't it? It's a Wednesday night. It's fairly warm today, you know, but you're still there watching football, covering football up in the north now. So non-league day this weekend, a fantastic opportunity to showcase what's on offer at non-league level. Anybody caught your eye with something special, something a little bit different?
Yeah, there's quite a few actually. Osset United, obviously newly formed. Osset United, they are heading to Colwyn Bay, which is obviously a bit of a trek down there to North Wales. And they're putting on a free bus service for supporters to celebrate non-league day. So they'll be hopeful of taking a fair few fans down there to Colwyn Bay, which I thought was quite a nice gesture by the club. Margate play Enfield Town, and 50% of the gate goes to Anthony Nolan Blood Cancer Charity. Oxford City, they play Concord Rangers, and Oxford are offering free entry for families, so that's two adults and two kids getting free, which I thought was a brilliant one. And the final one, as I nearly get hit by the ball here, is West Didsbury and Chorlton. They play Congleton, and they are allowing free entry to charity workers and service users, and they're also giving away free copies of the excellent When Saturday Comes magazine and Kick Around magazine. So there's a few things that clubs are doing that have caught the eye, but it's not, you know, obviously we all know what makes non-league so special, the unique nature of it. So anyone who's hungering hard about going to a game, I would suggest going down, because it's a unique environment and one that I think everyone would enjoy.
Well, that's it, isn't it? It's just a case of getting people down to watch a game, and then you think with the entertainment that they get, you know, the football's good, the facilities are good, it should hopefully bring them back, even if it's only one or two more times throughout the season. Once you get bitten by the bug, it's difficult to walk away.
I'll give you an example. So last Tuesday night, I was up at Bedlington Terriers in the Northern League, in the second division in the Northern League, paid £5 to get in. They were playing against North Island Town. The game finished 7-4. So, some of the goals wouldn't have looked out of place at the very top end of the game. And I think this is a thing that maybe, I don't know if you want to call it football snobbery, but I'll term it that anyway, where people think it's non-league football, it's just going to be loads of blokes going around kicking each other. But the standard of non-league football now is heading, you know, it's only going one way. And you look at the players that have moved up, there's obviously the ones that have been well-versed, but you look at League One, League Two, the Football League, it's littered with players who have made their way up from non-league football. The standard now is going up. People are trying to play football in what I would term the right way, you know, getting it down, passing it. There are some serious talents in non-league football, and I think if anyone listening is considering going to a game, I would, you know, I think they would be surprised by how good the standard is these days.
Yeah, you mentioned those players that have moved on into the Football League. I remember when I first got involved with Yedding Football Club 25 odd years ago, it used to be the thing in every match day programme or club history, it would be players that have progressed to the Football League. I mean, if you did that now, you probably need an extra programme just to mention them all.
Well, you look at Yedding, of course, they had DJ Campbell was there, wasn't he? He had a very good career at Birmingham. And and places like that. But, you know, these players now, I think the way the finances are in the Football League, the clubs have been forced to look for an alternative route of getting players in. And there's a few clubs have took a chance. You look at Peterborough, have had a whole host of non-league players who've gone there and kicked on. And I think it is a route that is becoming more and more appealing to Football League clubs. But that, to me, suggests that, you know, non-league, the standard of non-league, as I keep saying, is improving. The willingness of players in non-league football to take a risk and go to a pro club, because it is a risk, you know, going from semi pro to pro. They're all willing to do that. And I keep saying it, but this is why people should go and watch games regularly. I've fallen in love with football again because of watching non-league football. It's, you know, it's an honest part of the game. There's no frills, but it's also just some of the games you get to see are absolutely like hidden gems almost.
Yeah, I probably bore most of my friends and almost everybody I meet every week by talking about the passion of non-league, the potential of non-league, and the importance of non-league. And we saw that this week. You know, look at the fourth qualifying round being drawn on Monday, and FA Cup trended on Twitter in the UK for pretty much all of the day. Now, there weren't any Football League clubs involved in that FA Cup draw. There weren't any Premier League clubs involved. It was all about non-league. It was non-league people that were creating a trend on Twitter. That proves how important non-league is in this country.
That could have just been the amount of tweets that I put out on Saturday with the FA Cup in it that caused it a trend, mind. I was at Dunstan UTS against Chester on Saturday, which, you know, Dunstan Northern League Division 1 club, Chester National League North club, former Football League club, and Dunstan won that game, an absolute thriller, 4-3. Dunstan, this cup run have made £35,000, and they've got Gateshead, who are about 4 miles away from them. They've got Gateshead in the fourth qualifying round. It's been selected for the BBC's interactive coverage. And, that's given Dunstan an opportunity to grow. The FA Cup is probably now, for me, a non-league competition, because I think when you look at the Premier League and Football League clubs, certainly in the Championship, a lot of them see the golden ticket of the Champions League or getting in the Premier League, and the FA Cup's kind of sometimes it feels like a nuisance, whereas I've seen firsthand the impact that the FA Cup has on Dunstan or on clubs like Blyth Spartans when I used to work there. And it changes clubs. It's their lifeline to try and improve themselves in a kind of more sustainable manner rather than someone just throwing money in. It gives them a chance to build something long-lasting, which, you know. But it does, you're right, it shows the power of non-league football, that it was able to trend on Twitter, because of the amount of interest that there was from Football League clubs, from non-league clubs in the FA Cup. It's just so unique. It's just such a unique part of the game.
And showing how different maybe non-league is from the top level of the game, Dunstan UTS have kept the ticket prices for that Gateshead game, I think the £6 for adults, it's sort of their normal price. It's probably the cheapest FA Cup game, certainly at this round. They could have quite easily just abused the situation and overcharged or charged more for the tickets, but they haven't. And that's non-league through and through, isn't it?
Absolutely. And what I will say, the committee at Dunstan are one of the hardest working committees that I know in non-league football. I very much doubt it would have even crossed their minds to ramp it up to, you know, say £10, for example. I don't think they would have even thought about that. And maybe there would have been conversations about changing the kickoff time, because I know Newcastle United play at Brighton that day, which is just across the Tyne. So fortunately, the BBC have taken that out of their hands by the look of it, and it's now a 12:30 kickoff. So people might be able to get a double header in. But I think basically Dunstan are loyal to their loyal supporters, you know, they look after them, as a lot of non-league clubs do. And I think a lot of non-league clubs value the regulars, so they try and look after them as much as possible. And that, to me, encompasses exactly what non-league football is about. It's about loyalty. It's about, familiarity almost. And it's about creating an environment that is welcoming.
And you mentioned Blyth Spartans earlier. They've got a great tie as well, home to York City.
They have, and what's funny is, because I cover non-league football for the major local Sunday paper up here, And I've been given a choice of which game to do, and unfortunately Dunstan and Blythe is probably just a little bit too far to cover both, so I'm having to hedge regrets and probably going to oops, there's a bit of trouble on the pitch here, and someone's going to get a red card. Nope. Sorry. I think you know, it probably will be Dunstan. I think it's too big a tie to miss, given the locality of the two teams, and you know, I won't go so far as to call them local rivals. It's probably going to be the friendliest, one of the friendliest derbies ever. But you know, Spartans have got a great pedigree in the FA Cup, and you look at York, are a former semi-finalist in 1955, the richest semi-final of the competition. It's a wonderful tie, and I know what the competition means to Spartans and all the history of 78 and 2009 and 2014. So they are due to get to the first round again. So hopefully it'll be this year with my Spartans hat on.
Before I let you go, we've spoken about the Northeast being a hotbed of non-league football in recent seasons. And that's pretty much been at the lower levels. But with the restructure, promotions, other clubs being reinvigorated by new ownership, etc., things are really coming to life in the Northeast at all levels, which you must find with your day job.
Yeah, I mean, it's great for me when I look at, you see some of the journalists up here covering Newcastle United, Sunderland, and, you know, some of them haven't really had a lot to talk about that's positive over the last sort of 10 years now. But, you know, I've been at Wembley with various clubs in the FA Vars. I've seen Gateshead in the playoff final at Wembley. I've seen promotions. I've seen FA Cup runs. The argument that always goes out is the thing about Northern League teams not wanting to take promotion into the Evo stick. And I think a lot would have done it if it was done in a sustainable manner. And there's no coincidence that the teams that have gone up have been, you know, they've took the time to go up and they've got the infrastructure right. There are clubs at the top end of the Northern League now who I don't think would be able to do that, because they still need a little bit of work, maybe to their grounds, or they still need a little bit of work on the infrastructure and how they run themselves. But there's no doubt up here it is. It's absolutely thriving at the moment. You look at the success of South Shields, you know, going for four promotions in a row, winning four trophies in one season 2 years ago. You look at Morpeth Town, got promoted, currently top of the Evo Stick East. You've got Spennymoor doing absolutely fantastically in the National League North. Gateshead and Hartlepool both doing well. So there's so much positivity about the area, and kind of hoping that some of these disenchanted Newcastle and Sunderland fans will get down to some of the non-league clubs. And you know, we're very lucky up here. We've got a lot of clubs that have got great histories in non-league football, going back as far as, you know, your Crooktowns and your Bishop Auckland's. And it'd be nice to see the attendances boosted by some of those disenchanted Premier League fans.
Well, hopefully non-league day this weekend and then the FA Cup the following week. We'll give some of those fans an opportunity. Mark, it's always fantastic talking to you. We'll let you go and watch the rest of that game and grab a cup of bovril at half-time or something.
Oh, I think I'll have to. It's starting to get a bit chilly here.
Take care of yourself. Cheers, Mark.
Cheers, mate.
So let's stick to the subject of non-league day. One club not in the trophy action have certainly come up with a novel way of enticing new faces in. Pay what you want and free chips appears to have captured the imagination of many. And hopefully they'll be along to your game at AFC Rushden & Diamonds on Saturday, Vice Chairman John Ward.
We certainly hope so. That's the plan. We've been waiting for non-league day at home since we reformed, and this is the first one. So we thought we'd make a bit of a splash.
We were having a similar debate down at Hayes and Yedding last weekend. We've never been at home apart from the very first year on non-league day, which so we're away at Barking on Saturday in the trophy. But I mean, this idea of pay what you want and the free chips. So obviously, the free chips appears to be getting a lot of coverage. I mean, how did that come about?
Well, we just felt that we wanted to do something a little bit different. Than the normal, you know, give a league or Premier League season ticket holder a reduced entry. So we thought, well, let's do a pay what you want. We've run that a few times before. We managed to get almost 1,000 people at our last league game last season with a pay what you want. And we thought, well, you know, as it's non-league day and we've been waiting a while, let's go with something free as well. So we've got a, you know, and there'll be a limited quantity. There won't be unlimited free tips, but there'll be, you know, a good quantity of free chips there for people.
Good quantity. I guess the other question is, are they good quality chips? Will people be flooding back after tasting these chips this time around?
Well, if you go by Cambridge City's Chippy League, We won that last year out of all the teams in the league. So I would go and I'd back that and say they probably are the best in the league, to be fair. Whether they're best in the new Step 3 league, we're yet to find out. But they certainly were at Step 4.
You mentioned that, promoted last season into the Southern Premier. How are you settling in there?
I've enjoyed it probably more than the last sort of 5 years, really, because, you know, we found over the last 5 years, we were pretty much every time we took the field, more often than not, we were fairly favourites to win. The pressure was on us pretty much every game, becoming less so a little bit last year. But, you know, still we were expected to do well, get promotion. And actually, to be the team that can give a slightly larger team at this level a bloody nose and you know, see what we can do up against some bigger budgets, that kind of thing. It's been quite refreshing and actually quite enjoyable, even though, you know, we haven't had the best start, but we haven't been overrun. We've lost by the odd goal and been competitive in every game. And we started to see some signs last week with a fantastic 5-1 away win. So we're sitting 12th in the league and we're quite happy with that, to be honest.
And the standard, is that much more different than you imagined?
We thought it was going to be a big step up. It's definitely less forgiving, put it that way. Your mistakes are punished and if you don't take your chances, then, you know, you end up losing games, as we found over the last few games. So it certainly is in that respect. And I think also there's a lot more strength throughout the league. You know, any team could upset another team on its day, whereas it wasn't always the case over the last few seasons in the other leagues we were in.
Mm. And obviously you ground share, but I understand this season you now at least benefit from the bar in the ground. So games like this, when you're trying to get extra people through the gate, how important is that, that you've got that other revenue stream as a club?
Oh, it's very important. You know, we're, as you say, ground sharing. You know, there's a rent that we have to pay. And so our the numbers of supporters and our supporters and our members, and, you know, they're what keeps the club going. And the more we can get through the door, the more we can take through the door, the more competitive we can be on the pitch. And, you know, the more we can do for the fan experience around the ground as well.
Yeah, and you're a fan-run club, but obviously, as you mentioned, you know, with success comes extra pressure. And does that become harder when you're fans first and foremost and you're juggling all your club commitments with all your real jobs elsewhere? You know, there is just so much pressure on you as a board and people running the club.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, we're completely volunteer run. So everyone on the board and all the volunteers all have other day jobs. And that, you know, there are times when sometimes the other day jobs have to take priority because they pay the mortgage. But on the flip side, it's the thing that you love. So you always go back to it and you always put that extra time into it. And, you know, you have to have that balance. And, you know, we weren't able to sustain the kind of hours that you put into it from day one, but you've got to get to a balance. And you know, there is always that pressure and it does always drag you away when you don't want it to from your day job. But, you know, you've just got to make that balance work, really.
And we often say, you know, certainly when you get to the close season, it's not the close season for people that are running football clubs, that's the busiest season, time of the year, really. And have you had a chance ever, you know, as a group or individuals to look back and just savour what you've all achieved, you know, from where you were, from having the, you know, that new startup and the Phoenix and all of that. Have you had a chance to sort of, yeah, just even 10 minutes thinking about, actually, we're here?
I suppose this summer was probably the first one when we go, do you know what, if you'd have given us 6 years ago, you'll be at Step 3, playing in Rushton and getting, you know, an average of 600 through the gate, then we'd have all bitten your hands off. So, you know, when you sit back and you look at it like that, however, we didn't really get a chance to do that because we then were given the bar to run. So then we had to go and learn how to run a bar, you know. So we did, it was literally a few seconds to consider it. But it is, you know, when you sit back and you look at it and you know, you do think about it, you go, actually, you know, we've done all right, considering the circumstances that we started it all in.
Well, that's it. We've got you on to talk about non-league day as well, and we've already spoken about the difficulties clubs have in getting volunteers, and you know, or just the world in getting people to volunteer and that sort of thing. But there is, if you go along to your non-league club, you know, whether if you're just a fan and you're what I call the 3 till 5 o'clockers, and you just go along and watch the film, well, that's fine. But if you gave 10 minutes, 15 minutes, an hour, a couple of hours a week, the difference that would make to your football club is amazing.
Oh, it absolutely, you're quite right. It's, you know, being able to bring volunteers on board, keep them on board, keep them, you know, happy, and it's very, very difficult, you know, because you're a volunteer yourself, but, you know, you just do your best. And you know, I think a lot of people are nowadays opening their eyes to non-league and turning their backs on, you know, paying some silly money to go and watch some bigger teams, if you like, in the league, and actually, you know, they can see the attraction, and they can see that I could get involved here and make a little bit of a difference, whether it's just, you know, do a stint on the turnstiles or help out in the club shop or serve some tea or whatever, you know. And it's so rewarding, you know, because everything you do, everyone sees, and you know, you've done it. You've put that effort in. That's because of, you know, I did that bit. I, you know, got the 630-odd people through the turnstiles today. And if it weren't for me, you know, it would have fallen on someone else. So it does make a massive difference.
And there's no blue plaque for us all, is there? But, you know, as you said, you learnt over the summer how to run a bar. So you learn new skills as well, which might be useful in the future. I suppose, you know, from me being involved in non-league, I've ended up learning how to podcast, and I do podcasting elsewhere and that sort of thing. But there are various things. Yeah, I've learned to wire a tannoy and things like that since I've been involved in non-league. You never know when these might come in handy. I'm not sure where else I might need a tannoy, but non-league is the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, it does, absolutely. You know, I've never spoken to any member of the press, live or otherwise, beforehand. And, you know, we started doing this and it was like, well, I'll give it a go then. And, you know, you find all these things out, and it, we learn every day. Everyone on involved at our club still learns stuff, still learns new things. And, you know, the day that we think, oh, yeah, we've done all right, pat ourselves on the back and put our feet up, is the time then when we do need to put our feet up and step down from the ball, because, you know, I know it's a cliche, but you'll never stop learning, and we certainly don't. So, and you're right, if you want it to, it will keep on giving to you.
Yeah, well, hopefully you can put your feet up on Sunday after a successful day on Saturday. So, Rushden and Diamonds, pay what you want, free chips as well. Get along there if you can, and bring a mate as well. It's non-league day. Let's enjoy this thing.
Absolutely right. Quite agree.
Thank you very much for your time, John. Cheers.
That's brilliant. Thanks.
Okay, so time now just to head to Non-League Towers and catch up with editor Alex Neri for our weekly roundup of everything else non-league. Good afternoon, Alex.
Afternoon, Tim.
Another busy week in non-league. We have probably a very busy week over there. Lots of managerial changes it seemed to be this week. They'd almost like saved them up for a week, I think. So you've got... and Andy Hessenthaler leaving the Eastleigh job, obviously, last week, and takes over at Dover to replace Chris Kinnear in a three-year deal, which seems to be sort of the standard deal now for managers in non-league, 3 years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the Hessenthaler move, it surprised us a little bit when we first heard about it, but actually just rewinding sort of 7 days to back to last Saturday night with all these managerial changes, and the first one actually broke late last Saturday night, just as we were going to press, as they normally do. We got wind that Brad Quinton was stepping away from Braintree, and we contacted Lee Harding at Braintree to see if we could get some confirmation of that. Lee didn't want to kind of confirm that until Sunday morning, when they got their cards on the table and they dealt with it, and all the parties were happy. But obviously Brad leaving last week, and that kind of just opened the door for quite a few managerial changes this week. But the Hessenthaler move to Dover, that for me, I think John Couch has spoken to him this week, actually, he's spoken to Andy, and that really is a move of, that's a move that suits Andy geographically, really, with him being a Kent person, a Gillingham boy. He just wanted to get back to his roots, I believe. So a good move for him, and a good move for Dover, because it's funny, you know, he's leaving Eastleigh, a club who are, I think, second in the form table, second only to Salford. So done a pretty solid job there, by all accounts, coming in there and steadying this ship. And it's a bit of a, it can always be a bit rocky at Eastleigh, I find, but he's done a good job, brought in some good players and some good characters, and got them going in the right direction. So Andy's appointment at Dover is definitely a good move for the Whites. Really sad to see that to the back of Chris Kinnear, if I'm honest with you. I felt that Dover were challenging at the top of the table last year, and it's just the harsh realities of football in this league. And we've spoken about it many times, about the aspirations and ambitions that clubs have. Are they realistic? Are boards patient enough? I don't think they are. And I think in the case of Chris at Dover, I feel that they probably really could have stuck by him a little bit longer. I feel he's done a fantastic job and been a loyal servant to that club. But he's gone, and Andy will go in there, and I think Andy will do a very good job. Whether he can pull them away from the danger zone, because the four clubs that are down there at the moment that haven't, Dagenham, Braintree and Dover, they're just starting to get a little bit, this seems like there's a bit of a disconnection between that bottom four and the rest of the league. So really, really tough job ahead for Andy. But yeah, if anyone can do it, he can do it. He's got the experience, he's got the name, and I'm no doubt he'll bring in the players that will suit the challenge ahead for them. So good luck to him.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you mentioned the departure of Chris Kinnear, pretty much a club legend at Dover, whatever's gone on this season. But also Brad Quinton as well, leaving, you know, Braintree, another club legend as player and as manager. And I see old friend of the show, Hakan Hayrettin, has moved in there just as a caretaker, just to sort of steady the ship and try and, I guess, make sure that they don't get too far adrift before they can make a formal appointment.
Yeah, I know. They've brought in somebody who's familiar with the club. They've brought in somebody who make no bounds about it, he wants the job. So he'll give it everything. He's not there. That's the thing with some caretakers these days, that you bring them in and they are just that. They're just trying to fill a gap. But I know Hakan Hayrettin will really want to go in there and give it his all. And you know, it's the next three or four games are his job interview. So he's putting his CV forward. Just on Brad, I feel that I've got kind of mixed emotions about it, really, because when he got them promoted last season, where he got Braintree promoted from the National League South, they kind of snuck in through the back door, in the sense that they really benefited from the top seven playoffs. So I think they finished, I'm not sure exactly where they finished off the top of my head, but I know they didn't finish in the top three or even the four. I think they were maybe finishing in sixth place. So they really benefited and snuck through that playoff system, beating Hampton and Richmond Borough in the playoff final. And Brad was very, very loyal to the players that got him promoted. He went on record and said, "Yeah, I'm sticking with this crop of guys. I'm giving these guys a chance to play at the senior National League level." Now that's all very admirable, but the truth of the matter was that Braintree weren't good enough to finish in the top four or five of the National League South last season. So finishing anywhere above the bottom four in the National League was going to be a minor miracle, to be honest with you. So he stuck with those players. He gave them a chance, but I just feel that they never got going, and before you know it, it's too little too late. And you start bringing players in, the club doesn't look an attractive move for a player because they're rooted to the bottom of the table. So very admirable what Brad did, but at the same time, I certainly don't want to use the word naive because that's disrespectful, but I feel that maybe he needed to go out and recruit some big guns and build the side around that. You know, you can stay loyal to people. There's a loyalty card that you can play, but it's disappointing the way it's happened because, as you say, absolute club legend, and it's difficult when people like Brad and Chris Kinnear leave these clubs where they've just got such great status at. It's a sad way to end. But you know, like I say, I wish Brad Quinton all the best. He's a great football man, and we're sure he'll be back in the game very soon.
Talking of great football men, you look at another appointment. Keith Rowland leaving Wingate and Finchley at the back end of last week. Isthmian Premier there, and in have come two former Premier League players with proper experience as players in the shape of Nicky Shorey and Glenn Little. I think that, again, we keep talking about the profile of non-league being improved, you know, with the World Cup and, you know, success in FA Cup and players going on. Do you think that's a sign? I always thought that with all the money that's come into the Premier League in recent years, there's certainly no need for a former Premier League players to get involved or stay involved in football. So it suggests to me that they're proper football men.
Proper football men. Yeah, we've spoken to Nicky this week, and he's in Sunday's issue talking about the move to Wingate and Finchley. I think it's fantastic. I think it's a proper football man. It's proper football people wanting to stay involved in the game, and they know that it's not easy. They know that they just can't. It's very rare. Look, you know, John Terry retiring this week and walking straight into a number two role at one of the biggest clubs in the Championship, one of the biggest clubs in the country, let's be honest, at Aston Villa. Those moves are rare. You know, only the top players with top profiles can just walk into those jobs. So there's a small window for those guys. And you know, the other guys, even though they've played in the Premier League, like Nicky Shorey, like Glenn Little, they know that if they want to meet their aspirations, if they want to fulfill their management ambitions, they have to drop down into non-league. And I admire the way they do it. They roll their sleeves up. They know they have to have a go. And I'm sure that they'll do a really good job. But speaking to Nicky this week, as we have done, he's under no illusions. He knows it will be difficult. He knows that he'll have to study the market and get the right players in there. And it will be tough. And it's always a little bit tricky for these. I always think it's quite tricky for these guys that have played at such a high standard when they do come down to the lower leagues. They demand a standard, or they expect a standard from players, and it doesn't always happen that way. But I'm sure that, you know, having spoken to Nicky, he's fully aware of the task ahead, and I think he's a great appointment. I think him and Glenn are a great appointment there, and they can take that club forward.
And you touched briefly on the issues that Eastleigh have had. There still doesn't appear to be anybody in place there. But one of the former Eastleigh bosses, it's a bit like an actor having previously in the bill on their CV, I think, a former Eastleigh boss. But Chris Todd is the new man in charge at Gloucester City.
He is, yeah, and good on him. I'm really pleased for Chris. That everyone at the non-league paper is really pleased for him. He's a good guy, a friend of the papers, and he's always been on hand to help us over the last couple of years. He left Eastleigh. I think he was the first manager to get sacked, or first manager to vacate his position back in the early part of 2016 season. So I'm not sure the Eastleigh job at that time, having spoken to him since, was probably ideal for him. I feel that the Eastleigh job, particularly the demands of that football club and the ambitions that they had and the money they had, it was a very difficult. Just because they had a lot of money, it wasn't an easy job. So I think Chris down there, you know, moving away, it might have been a bit of a blessing in disguise for him. But I think he's found his feet now, and I think that's a great move for him. Just talking about Eastleigh as well, we have spoken to Hessen Tala this week, and he's very, very keen for his assistant Ben Strevens to be given a chance at that job. And I think that would be a really good move for Ben and for the club. He's still a very, very young guy in his late 30s. You know, the opportunity to go into a number one role, he's made out for that, really. To be honest, if you look at his playing CV, it's littered with quality and experience. So, yeah, we'd like to see people like Ben Strevens given a chance at Eastleigh, and it's great to see good guys like Chris Todd getting their chance again. So, yeah, it's always the way. Nobody likes to see managerial changes and managers walking out, or managers getting the sack, but you know, while one door closes for somebody, it opens another door for somebody else. And yeah, there's some good people that were in non-league who've got some good jobs this week, so good on them.
Yeah, and we're tight for time already, but just a quick run round on the other things. England C, obviously, with a good win in the week. Any feedback from anybody that went along to Leighton Orient in the week?
Yeah, David Richardson went along, one of our guys, and he said it was a pretty convincing performance, pretty convincing display. The only downside, I suppose, would be the crowd that I think was pretty low. I'm not sure what the final figure was. I think it was somewhere around about the 600 mark. I'm not sure it was quite that, if I'm being honest with you, but I'm not sure. You'd hope that everybody, all the Leighton Orient fans, are saving themselves for Saturday and a bumper clash against Hartlepool on non-league day. I know that they've been selling out a lot of tickets. I think they've been selling tickets at reduced prices to get people through the gate. So great to see a club like Leighton Orient really embracing non-league day. But the crowd was a little bit disappointing, if I'm honest with you, on Wednesday night. And while I see the England C setup as very important for the structure of the National League game and non-league football, I just wonder what we need to do to get more bums on seats at these games, because that's a big game. You know, having England C play at Brisbane Road and you know, it's a bit of a historical event, really. So I would have liked to have seen, obviously, more people through the gate, but it's a bit tricky. We obviously want people to be lining up for Saturday's games and non-league day, but a little bit disappointing on that front. But performance-wise, we've heard nothing but positive things, and a good win for Paul Fairclough's side.
And you mentioned non-league day. We covered that in the programme this week, as well as FA Cup coming up next week, FA Vase and FA Trophy this weekend. What else can we expect in the paper this week? You're going to have extra pages, surely.
Well, we are, yeah. It's 56 pages, so we're suckers for punishment, as you know. We're just doing as much as we can. It's a tricky one, really. With the Vase and the Trophy on the same weekend, it really does take up a lot of manpower. But yeah, it's what we do, and it'll be a bumper weekend. We are looking forward to the FA Cup fourth round qualifying next weekend. Now there's some cracking ties lined up in there, and all the replays that have been settled. So yeah, looking ahead to that. But this weekend it'll be an exciting issue as always. We'll have all the managerial coverage covered off. We'll have the England C round up. We've got an interview with Lawrence Maguire, brother of Harry Maguire, obviously played for England C the other night, and all sorts of other things going into the interview. So there's a lot to do. Busy Friday as normal, and as always, you know, if you want to pop by and lend your services, I'm always trying to get you in for a Friday for a shift. But we're up against it tomorrow. But you know, it should make for a very good issue.
I look forward to reading it, not necessarily. Alex, we wish you well with getting the paper out, and we thank you once again for your time, and look forward to speaking to you next week.
Cheers, Tim. Good man.
That's it for this week. A big thank you to Dave Anderson and, of course, all of our guests, plus a big thank you to all of you for listening. Don't forget, you can follow us throughout the season and join in throughout the week on social media at Non-League Show. Tell your friends too that they can find us every week on Audio Boom, on iTunes, Stitcher, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, and all good podcast aggregation sites. Thank you and goodbye.
A Jibber Jabber Production. JIBBA JABBA.